Thank you. First, I'm gonna talk about the 2 millimeter and the gamma ray connection, example of lasers seen by Planck and Fermi. And then I'm gonna tell you about the millimeter and gamma ray connection, example of Northern lasers. And this work has been done in collaboration with Escobar da Hoxha, Fontorla Observatory, Maria Tornikoski, and Dante Maki, and Elina Neopola. Well, first, as you know, a Planck is a DND satellite. There is a movie production of Planck that observes the whole sky at 9 frequencies, from 30 up to 860 gigahertz. And Planck completes a vast whole sky survey every 6 months. And early this year, the Planck collaboration has released a catalog of the point sources detected in the first 9 months of operations. And within the Planck early results, there were 2 studies on blazars. And the first one was led by Janet Plantemaki, the Hoyer Observatory. And the second was led by Paolo Giomi on this from ARDC in Italy. And this works. They collected simultaneous Planck, SWIFT, Fermi, radio, and optical data for more than 170 lasers. And you can see here how the observatory is involved in this work. And then we use this multi-frequency data set to build a well-sampled simultaneous SED and detect radio spectrum. And from the SED, we estimated the synchrotron and inverse combo peak frequencies, and the radio spectra were characterized by 2 power loops. The low frequency and high frequency spectral index. And in the first work, we focus in a complete sample of 104 radio sources. And you can see here is the low frequency spectral index distribution, which is centered around 0, and this is what we expect for blazars. Here is the high frequency spectral distribution. The high frequency spectral index distribution, which is centered around minus 0.5. And this is unexpected because spectral indices of lasers at millimeter frequencies should not be this flat. And in most cases, what we expect to see is a submillimeter spectra, which have already experienced energy losses. However, one flat high frequency spectral index has 2 possible explanations. Either the total high frequency spectra is defined by several underlying components, as you can see here, or the energy spectrum of the electron population is much harder to generally assume. And the disentangle between these 2 scenarios, what we need to do is study the spectral evolution of these sources. And to do that, we need to analyze the upcoming Planck data. Here I'm going to show as an example, 3C454.3. This spectra was taken by Planck in December 2009 when a gamma ray flare was ongoing. It's a simultaneous SED. And you can see here that this part of the spectra is well characterized by the one single synchrotron component, which is absorbed in the millimeter wavelength regime. And to really get an insight between the submillimeter and the gamma ray connection, what we need to do is study how the changes in the spectral evolution are related to changes in the target energy part of the series. And now we are working in this direction with a new Planck data. Well, now moving with a second paper, and in this paper we estimated the samples of lasers analyzed in this paper have been selected from very well-defined samples characterized by the flux limiting the saw, X-rays, RX-rays, and gamma rays, and all these sources will compare to the radio sample described before. And in this source, we estimate the synchrotron and inverse combo peak frequencies in a more careful way by removing the contamination of the host galaxy and migration disk. that are represented by these templates. And well, from the information started from the simultaneous SEDs, there were two results. Well, there are more results, but I'm going to mention two of them. Is that the simple LSE models cannot reveal or explain the SEDs of many of the blazars considered here. And more specifically, those blazars which are detected at gamma rays. And by comparing the synchrotron pitch frequency and the volumetric luminosity, well, an anti-correlation was found in contrast what is expected by the blazar sequence. If you want to see more details, please go to this reference. And now we move to the second part of the talk, that is about the millimeter and gamma ray connection in the center of northern blazars. From the meta hobby, well, there are some movies here, but they are not playing. So, from the meta hobby monitoring program, we selected the 45 best sample light curve, and then we decompose the millimeter light curves into individual millimeter flares, each of which represent one disturbance between in the jet, and is often detectable in the DLBI maps as the new component. Well, there is a movie here, but I'm so sorry. Well, by combining the 1FGL and the millimeter light curve, here are the millimeter light curve decomposed in individual exponential flares. And by combining the 1FGL and the millimeter light curves, we found that the strongest gamma ray flares tend to occur during the rising or peaking stages of the individual millimeter flares. This was found in the Y times by Escobar-Tawaja and Carreteras-Rant. And what we did in this work is that we only focused on the most prominent gamma ray flare in the 1FGL period, and then we define the beginning of the millimeter flare as the unfolding time of the exponential flare. And based on this, we estimate the time delay between the beginning of the millimeter flare to the time when the most prominent gamma ray peak occurs. And you can see here the observed time delay distribution, which is centered around 70 days. So meaning that once the millimeter flare started, so we have to wait like 2 months to see the most prominent gamma rays. Okay, and then we converted these time delays to linear distances from the region where the millimeter flare started to the region where the most prominent gamma rays were produced. And well, our estimate leads us to conclude that in average, that in our sample, the average location of the gamma ray production is around 7 parsecs from the radio curve. Use a highlighted example to show the consistency of our measure, our estimate with other works. Well, at 7 parsecs from the radio curve, the only sources of seed photons to produce the inverse component scattering are the jet itself or the ghost photons. And this suggests that an external compton model based on soft photons from the volant region are unlikely to be able to display the gamma rays in these sources. Well, the summary of this first part is that the strongest gamma ray flares in the 1FGL period, in a sample of 45 northern blazars, occur after the millimeter flare onset, and the average location of the gamma ray production is about 7 parsecs from the radio curve. And at these distances, sources of three photons for this component scattering are the jet itself or the dusty torus. However, we know that the simple LSE models fail to reproduce the right amount of gamma rays, as shown by the linear imports here. And so far, the detection of those has been limited to a couple of blazars, as in these references. So, based on this argument, are we sure that we can rule out the external compton model based on the top four constitution of the Western region? Well, and just from looking at this picture, it looks plausible, an interaction between the inner jet and central bloodline region. And then at this point, I would like to raise the question whether the jet is influencing the bloodline region or not. And the most effective way to find a signature of such interaction is by combining spectral optical line monitoring of nearby AGN with a regular VLBI observations. And we did so for two sources, 90.3 and 3C120, the optical telescope. And we combined their data with the VLBI data, mostly from the Mojave program. Because I want to say that these two sources are known to reverberate, in the sense that the stronger the optical continuum, the more prominent the broad emission line. And here you can see the inner shape of 90.3, and we apply multiple techniques, as already here. And we identified the radio core, the moving component, and one stationary component that was always around the same location. I think you're not going to play this movie. I'm so sorry. Well, it's a pity because this thing is. Basically, the effect here is that when a moving component shifted from the core, the optical flare starts to rise. And the maxima is associated when this component passes the location of this stationary feature. Here it is 120. And I use this sketch to try to summarize this effect for both sources. The one component shifted from the radio core passes the location of this stationary feature, and we get the maxima in the optical continuum. But for these sources, the node emission line follows the continuum emission. So how is possible that the optical emission that is produced here and is non-thermal can ionize material that is here in the development region? So can display this correlated variability, and so we assume the presence of an solaristic outflow, an affluent line region, which might be filled by material that might come from the other parts of the accretion disk or the jet that extracts some of the central bloodline region as it propagates. Or the jet just tracks some part of the bloodline region within. Then, when a component propagates from the radio core, produces ionizing continuum. And this ionizing continuum illuminates the material in the transversal region, and this is why we see this correlated variability between the non-thermal optical continuum and the broad emission lines. And, well, the conclusions of these works is that a significant amount of broad emission line is driven by the continuum radiation from the jet. Therefore, the broadband region in this object is complex and not completely realized. And implications of non-realized and affluent broadband region is, of course, for the gene models, because the broadband region is more complex than we thought. For the black hole mass estimates via revelation mapping techniques, because this method assumes that the broadband region is realized. And also for the gamma ray productions, we propose in this work an affluent broadband region that might serve as a sort of seed pattern to produce the gamma rays even at distances of passes than the jet. So, as I told you before, the passes from the radio core is far from the central broadband region. However, an affluent broadband region might provide the seed patterns of the might provide seed patterns for dimorphic component scattering, even if the gamma rays are produced far away from the central black hole. And to take this idea, we started monitoring of a sample of dark gamma ray emissions from the broad emission line, and you will see here how the optical spectra is changing and also the broad emission line profile. Well, the final summary is that we found that the strong gamma ray flares tend to occur after the mid interferon onset, and they are produced in average 7 passes from the core. And at these distances, the sources of seed photons could be either the jet itself, the dusty torus, or perhaps an open broadline region, maybe an alternative source of seed photons produce the gamma rays via inverse component scattering, even if the gamma rays are produced far away from the central black.
say that you guys are starting these spectral monitoring and the optical, or you got the results?
We started the last year after the Fermi-Jansky meeting, but they just will receive the data, and we haven't decomposed the profiles. So they will receive the data.
Some other objects people have been doing that, and they said there isn't much, if any, spectral variability during all the activity.
Well,
but that was more
in quasar. Yeah. I catch on this picture, and you can see how they change in all these different states. Yeah, I can show you.
It's hard to justify the optical being non-thermal for two reasons. One is polarization is variable, and so there's no difference at all in the synchrotron radiation and polarization.
But for that, probably it could be the whole galaxy, because this also has a strong contribution on the whole galaxy.
Right, yeah, but we're talking about the variable emission. The variable optical emission goes up and down with the X-rays, which are from the central engine. And it's also, and as I said, it's not polarized at all, down to less than 10%. So it looks like that the 3120 looks like it's thermal, and it's also associated with the X-ray.
Yeah, but well, I mean, as I showed you with component passes with standing feature, I will get all these flips. Yes,
but we also don't see that standing feature according to jiggers.
Because you get this, smaller reported here, and this component is at 1.6 parsec from the radio correct here.
Okay.
Just use the current speed and the things of the heavy analysis. Yes. This is the beginning of the new interface, and this is when the gamma ray peak occurs.
It's a couple of times implicitly in the apparent speed. Any other questions? Okay, let's thank Jonathan and our speakers.